Dancers have a lot to balance. From their pirouettes to their jumps, a dancer's performance is a direct result of hard work and motivation. So where does food fit into this? There's a lot of myths and a ton of antiquated ideals about what a dancer's diet should look like. And I'm here to dispel those. I'm Rachel Fine, registered dietitian nutritionist and founder of To The Point Nutrition. I'm the dance nutritionist, and I'm here to tell you that to be a successful dancer, you don't have to diet. Instead, I'll teach you how to use food as your best tool to enhance your performance. A nourishing meal plan not only fuels your dancing, but also enhances your strength, improves your balance, supports your flexibility, and most importantly, reduces your risk to injury. Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
Not too bad. Pretty good. I have a two-day weekend. We're about to go into Tech Week for Nutcracker. So I'm heading into the theater already tomorrow since we're opening on Thursday. Today is my second day of, or today's my, you know, second day of my weekend. So we have Sunday, Monday off this week. So just trying to relax mostly today and kind of like meal prep, et cetera, for the crazy theater week. But yeah, for the most part, really excited to kind of get in there and, you know, do our thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad that I caught you during this prior to it getting pretty crazy for you starting tomorrow.
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, me too. I'm so excited. I've been following you for a while. So, and you've done, you know, conversations with people I know, people I follow. So I've been really excited and just very honored that you wanted to do this with me. So,
yeah, of course. Oh, my gosh. I'm so honored to have you here. And I'm so honored to pick your brain and get some insight that I can share with the dancer. So why don't we start with you introducing yourself? I know pretty much all about you and your dance career, but I would love for you to share a bit more.
So yeah, my name is, for those who don't know me in the chat here, my name is Leland Charles. And yeah, I'm currently in my, halfway through my seventh season, I think. Yes, or I think so. Six and a half. Yes. Halfway through my seventh season with Ballet Met, a dancer and a choreographer there as well. And yeah, originally from Maryland and grew up there my whole life, trained kind of recreationally growing up, and then was humbled enough to go to Juilliard, where I graduated back in 2014. And I actually think I saw Leslie in here, who I went to Juilliard with. Hi, Leslie. Yeah, and then after that, I got my first job with Alberta Ballet in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, where I danced there for three seasons. And then after that, kind of wanted to, you know, come closer to home, was a little bit homesick. And it was just, for my family personally, very hard for them to be able to kind of afford to come out there and see me perform. So I wanted to try to find somewhere closer to home that I could go and perform, and felt like a change of pace. And then, you know, did a few auditions here and there and got offered a contract with Ballet Met and was like, yeah, let's do it. Yeah, and have been here since. So yeah, it's been great.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'd love to hear a little bit. I feel like there's been some really great transitions throughout your career. I hope you can hear me. The gardeners just started working the second I sat in my chair. So I hope the background noise is not too distracting.
No. Yeah, okay. I can hear you great.
So it sounds like you had some really large transitions just moving from home to college and then to Canada, back closer to home. I'd love to hear a little bit about what some of the challenges were that you experienced throughout these transitions and what, you know, you were, I guess, ultimately seeking to by the time you got to Ballet Met and maybe felt more settled.
Yeah, good question. Initially, I would say, I mean, I'm very much in general, even as I'll be 31 tomorrow. And so as an adult, I'm already very much like a huge, huge homebody and just love to very much like always be kind of at home if I can be, and just like resting, relaxing, and, you know, being around like people that are my friends, family, etc. And so one of the huge things when I was especially going from even early in my adolescence from college or from high school, graduating high school, going to college, I actually have quite a few most of my extended family on my mom's side specifically all live in New York. And so when I went to college, it was really great to have a lot of friends and family, including my older brother, who is about 4 years older than me, who went to college in New York as well, was living there at the time, to have a lot of friends and family there. But even still, similar to now, I was so used to always just being very like intertwined with my home life. And even though I had, you know, my extracurricular, more so dancing, it was very much that I was very attached to very much like being at home in that space. And so, you know, that first time really going away and living on my own, even still as an adolescent, was super, super difficult. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it took me probably, even with, you know, family there, it took me probably a good, probably until the end of my second year out of four to really feel super comfortable being in that space and coming from, you know, a studio where you might be like the best dancer around. And, you know, definitely someone who's going to get pushed a little bit more, you know, onto that professional track. And then not just Juilliard, but plenty of colleges or dance programs where now you're in an environment where everybody is just as talented as you in so many ways. And so that adds even more pressure to it of kind of being in a new space. And then on that level too, with how competitive dance can be or the field can be of trying to make new friends in that same space. So that was definitely a huge transition for me. And I think part of what made it even harder was that growing up, I didn't go into my first like dance intensive away from home until the summer before my senior year of high school. I actually didn't even really know summer intensives existed. Mm-hmm. So the fact that I was already 16, almost 17 by the time I went into a space where I saw dancers who were incredibly talented, already somewhat pre-professional to professional, and being like, oh my God, like this is what this is what professionals look like. And I had no idea. I mean, I feel like I have so much more work to do and all that. Right. So that just kind of like added to it once I moved into going to college. And one of the reasons why I thought when I was graduating high school, oh, you know, I don't really think I'm ready yet for a professional track. And so I feel like for me, even with my dance studio owner and teachers being like, oh no, audition for San Fran now and ABT now and all these places now, I just, part of me knew, you know, I don't think I'm really ready for that, and needed to kind of really listen to myself in that sense and know, okay, hey, like I know I still want to go to college and get an academic background in some form, but I truly love dancing, want to end up doing it as a profession, so I feel like this is going to be the right track for me. And yeah, so I want to say, and of course the 4 years in college was incredibly difficult and challenging, but if I had to go back and do it again, I would. I mean, I got such wonderful opportunities, dancing repertoire that some dancers in professional companies don't even get to dance sometimes. And being able to learn so many different dance styles and techniques. I mean, I grew up pretty much predominantly only doing classical ballet. And then, you know, once I got into college, I was doing Graham technique, Taylor, contact improvisation, composition, Gaga my senior year, Horton, Cunningham, contemporary partnering, classical partnering. Yeah. I mean, it's just everything under the sun I was doing. And I'm so grateful that I have such a versatile background now, especially with my dancing, and feel super well-rounded when it comes to it. And at the end of the day, that's, you know, a plus when you're dancing in a company, especially even ballet companies nowadays, doing very contemporary work and modern work. I mean, our first program, we had Vespers by Mrs. Dove, which is barefoot, pretty much a modern dance piece. And, you know, my colleagues killed it. the challenges of kind of like more so not necessarily being exposed to such a huge dance realm early on was challenging from going into college, and even a bit starting my first job with Alberta Ballet. On top of that, moving to Canada and being way far away from home and just trying to, you know, get my feet wet in the professional experience right away and just try to kind of embrace that and see where it could lead. And I would say now in my career, in June of 2014, I'll celebrate 10 years as a professional. And kind of looking back on it, I'm really proud of like the progress I've made. And so it's been really great to see myself grow in that sense and be so much more comfortable now with myself as a dancer. Yeah. And with kind of how things have progressed throughout my own career, and being grateful for kind of just what I have in the sense of dance and finding new passions of choreography, et cetera, things like that. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh my gosh, a lot that I want to unpack. First things first, happy early birthday.
Thank you.
Excited. You're a December baby. I love that. First is just to go back to the beginning of the discussion in regards to feeling a lot of what you are speaking about feels so relatable for myself in regards to A, being a homebody, B, having a degree of comfort from being closer to home. And I think a lot of dancers, I know I struggled with this when I was shifting gears from pre-professional track to professional track, was the fear and challenge of, you know, what I didn't know. Also coming from a small studio, also where you're, you know, potentially the star of that little small studio, and then being introduced to the real world of dance and, you know, being slapped in the face with all the incredible talent that's out there. But also at the same time, so what can happen for many dancers in that sense is that it can either cause a lot of comparative mindset, or it can be utilized to fuel and motivate all the progression that you ultimately experience. And that's, it sounds like that's really the path that you were able to take with that, which is incredible.
Yeah.
I would love to hear a little bit more about how you were able to navigate through. I don't want to say move past, because you definitely, I don't want to say that you didn't experience a comparative mindset. You absolutely could and maybe still do, but how are you able to navigate the challenges of a comparative mindset being in a very high level and competitive environment, let's just say like Juilliard?
No, very good question. I mean, and still, even though it's gotten a lot better for me as my career has progressed, there's, you know, there's still days where it happens a little bit naturally. Sure. But I mean, the biggest thing I feel like that truly helped me was the fact that you always have to know that you made it to where you are for a reason. You know, I'm in the field, I'm in a company, I'm doing what I love, and there's a reason for that. I was talented enough to be able to do it. I worked hard enough to be able to do it. So there's no reason why I should question why, you know, I shouldn't be here. And there's always the days where you're maybe going to look at that one person and be like, oh, just wish my leg went a little bit higher, or, you know, wish my feet were a little bit more arched. But then you have to take a second to look, you know, like MJ, the man in the mirror. You got to say, hey, I have all of these incredible qualities myself, which is why I'm able to be a person, you know, at a very high level in this field. And it really is a journey every day to really tell yourself, hey, like, I'm doing such a wonderful job today. Like, yes, my pirouettes were great today. And yes, you know, I was really strong on my supporting leg today. And it's just really that self-motivation and self-love too, which can be incredibly difficult for every dancer in this field, dancer, choreographer, anybody in the artistic field. And yeah, of course, naturally, the comparativeness is always going to happen a little bit, but the more you really tell yourself and show yourself the wonderful qualities you have as an artist is going to help you, I mean, tenfold moving forward. Yeah. And it's going to make it a lot easier to keep yourself, you know, in check, you know, for yourself in the field. And because especially with ballet, it's like, you know, you're always trying to achieve perfection and you want to be able to just keep growing every day and working as hard as you can, you know, regardless of the little things, the obstacles that can hold you back each day, regardless of whether that be physical, mental, emotional. Yeah. So it's really important to, even if it's just something small every day, to really tell yourself something that you did, that you know you did really well that day, or just reinventing those beautiful qualities that you have for yourself that you know helped you get to where you are. So,
yeah, I love that. I mean, similar to the work that I do with dancers, even in regards to food and, you know, fueling our bodies. And for a lot of dancers who have struggled with their relationships with food in the past and are now building new habits around reminding themselves, you know, why I need to fuel my body multiple times a day, why I need to steer clear of tempting thoughts to maybe want to restrict my food intake or anything like that. Reminding ourselves of even just affirmations throughout the day. You know, I love that you utilize seeking these positive or even neutral qualities about your experiences, yourself, your dancing, and hooking onto that as much as possible. Because like you said, that comparative mindset can always trickle in no matter where we are. You could be 10 years into your professional career and still experience it, like with what you're saying. So holding on to those qualities and really aiming to pick these apart. I actually did this last night. It's just a side story. I have an almost 7-year-old son, and he's a perfectionist. He shows signs of perfectionism, which he obviously gets from me. And I, luckily, because of all my experience struggling with perfectionism, I'm able to identify and kind of help him, you know, with some of these thoughts. But if one thing bad happens in his day, he does have a tendency to hook onto it. So even just last night, you know, I'm sitting with him and I'm like, you know, why was today such a bad day? Why? Well, you know, I lost my little erasers and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, well, let's think about what else we did today. We baked cookies, we did that. And just trying to pull out these positive experiences so that we can remind ourselves that, like you said, I love this word, it's a journey. Every day is a journey, right? With our dancing, with our capabilities, with our food, with how we fuel our bodies. I hear from a lot of dancers who say, how do I make up for the weekend? I ate so badly this weekend, or I had a cast party. And I'm like, well, listen, all of our experiences are going to ebb and flow, right? It's we're never achieving perfection, right? As you said. And I think that's really such a beautiful quality. And I love hearing that you are holding on to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you talk to us a little bit about your choreography and your shift, or I don't, maybe not necessarily a shift, but your addition of choreography into your career now, and how that is helping you with artistic expression with your dancing?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, hi, Michelle. One of my classmates. One of my closest nice. Friends. Here we are. The first thing I ever choreographed was my audition solo that I used at Juilliard that was maybe like 2 minutes long. Yeah. And it, like, I also have a gymnastics background, so I like threw in an aerial in the solo just to like give a little bit of extra spark to hopefully, like, you know, get something out of that. I mean, I had no choreographic experience. This is pre-Juilliard, pre having any sort of composition classes or anything like that, or any interest in choreography at all. But I thought, well, I don't know any choreographers really, especially growing up, you know, in a recreational studio where, you know, I wasn't at SAB or anything like that, where I would have necessarily been really around any of that very closely. And so I didn't know any choreographers or anything like that. So I thought, well, my only choice is to really come up with something myself and see. Yeah. And even after doing that, the spark wasn't necessarily there. I more so just did it because I had to, so to speak. And then it wasn't until I got into college when I had dance composition class for the first time and was learning more so even techniques about choreography and ideas of how to come up with different movements or styles for, you know, for yourself. And each semester at Juilliard, there would be 2 independent dance workshops. So there'd be 4 each year, and dancers could, regardless of freshman to senior, could choreograph anything, you know, they wanted to, if they wanted to. And it was completely open to the public, those shows. They were free shows. And of course, I was terrified to do that, period, my first year at all. And so I thought, well, I'm not a choreographer. I don't really thought about that. So I'm going to kind of, you know, just shy away from that. And then more so throughout my first year and then into my second year, I thought, well, okay, let me try to explore this more, because actually from every freshman was in dance composition 1, but only I think about maybe half the class, maybe about, I had 26 six in my class. So we had 13 boys and 13 girls.
Yeah.
And I think only about maybe 8 to 10 were actually chosen based on work maybe they did your freshman year into Composition 2. So unfortunately, I wasn't chosen for Composition 2 and thought, oh, well, that must mean, you know, I'm not necessarily, like, good at choreography or choreographer or anything like that. And, you know, one of those mindsets that we have to shift.
Yeah.
And so I thought, well, you know what? We have the workshops. I'm still going to, you know, try to go for it, especially, you know, now my second year. I'm feeling a little bit more comfortable, especially with my own classmates, everything. And so let me just try to create something and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that first workshop, I still was a little bit tentative to do, but then the November workshop, a little bit further into the year, I decided to do choreograph another solo on myself, and I felt, you know, a little bit better about that. And so once I did that, I said, okay, well, now I really feel like I want to try to choreograph on other people to kind of get a little bit more out of it and see if I can get more creative. So then our first workshop in the new year of my second year, I choreographed on for four ladies throughout the dance department who are all very good friends of mine. And that was about maybe like a 4-minute piece that had to do with kind of like loss. And that's when I started to be like, okay, this is actually like pretty fun to come up with dances like this and try to kind of get new ideas each time. So then from then on, pretty much every workshop that came up, I'm pretty sure I started to choreograph for each one to try to get, you know, more ideas out there, try to challenge myself in the sense of choreographing with 9 people this time instead of 4 and really try to switch up creativity when it comes to formations and musicality and things like that. And so by my senior year, by this point, I'd probably choreographed a good 7 to 8 pieces, whether, you know, a couple be solos, some duets, some trios, some quartets. Mm-hmm. And I was lucky enough that I think my senior year, two of my pieces throughout that year got chosen for something called Choreographic Honors, where those pieces get to be kind of restaged to be put onto our main stage that we perform on at Juilliard, perform on at Juilliard, which is the Peter J. Sharp Theater.
Sure.
And so that was really incredible for me to kind of think, oh, wow, so maybe this is something that people did notice that I'm like growing at and wanted to give me more of the opportunity to show that work. And so after that, I really started to want to kind of delve into it a little bit more. And I was very lucky that once I joined Alberta Ballet, my second season there in the fall, we did a performance called Up Close, which was more an in-studio performance where we kind of turned our big main studio into a black box where we had kind of like lights, curtains, everything. And the audience was, I want to say, the audience was almost like in a round for that show. Okay. And that's when I kind of choreographed my first piece on, you know, a professional company.
Yeah.
And that's when I was kind of like, oh, this is awesome. This is like the real deal. Not that I didn't super love, obviously, choreographing on my friends at Juilliard. I did. But having it on like a bigger scale and seeing where it can really grow to was also what really had me starting to love it a lot. And just, so from there, I choreographed about a 20-minute piece with, I believe, 9 dancers. And I was super, super inspired after that to like want to keep creating. So I, unfortunately, at least what my time at Alberta Ballet, those 3 seasons, I didn't get another opportunity to choreograph. But then once I came to Ballet Met, I wanted to, you know, obviously keep that moving forward. And I started to, I don't remember how it actually started, but one of my close friends who was in the second company at the time, who's one of my close friends now, his name's Bailey Shaw, and he dances at Oregon Ballet Theater. He wanted a solo that he could use for, you know, auditions for companies. And so I choreographed something small for him. And then, you know, of course, now in the time of social media and Instagram blowing up more, you know, people are posting videos and stories and things like that. And so I think then, you know, some of his friends were in the trainee program saw that. So then it was, you know, so a few trainees would be like, hey, I saw what you did for Bailey. Can you maybe choreograph something for me? Or, and then another one of my friends in the company, Peter, asked for a solo as well. And so it started off a little bit like that. Then I believe it was my second year where one of the directors of the second company at the time saw on social media that I was choreographing as well. Sure. To my knowledge, she liked my work. Thank you very much, Amber. And she asked me to choreograph a work for the second company, who had, and the Ballymet second company has 6 dancers. And so at the time I did a piece with 4 dancers and then used 2 of them as covers to kind of go in and out. And so that was the first work I created then for a second company. And then the following year, I did another work for the second company. And then by that point, Edward had, of course, seen my work. And so, unfortunately, then 2020 started to come. So my first opportunity to choreograph a work for the main company of Ballymet was going to be our last program of the 2019-2020 season.
Okay.
And unfortunately, the pandemic had hit, you know, like a month and a half before that. And so that was actually going to be a dancer choreography production, which we were all really excited about. But unfortunately, that, along with the program we were going to do before that, which was Carmen, a version of Carmen, both canceled. You know, season was cut off at March, you know, that Thursday, March 12th.
Yeah.
And I mean, yeah, I feel like most dancers, I mean, everybody probably remembers exactly where they were, what they were doing that day when it happened. I mean, yeah, it was like 3:30, everyone goes into the studio, it's like, sorry, this is what's going on. And it was one of those things where we thought we were coming back on Monday, and then with Ballymet at least, we didn't end up coming back to work until January of 2021. Yeah, so we, from March 12th through till January, I think, whatever the, maybe the end of that first week of January, we started back. And even then, we started back virtually for a month and then didn't get back into the studio until, I believe, like February 1st or whatever that Monday was of 2021. But that being said, luckily, when we came back, we still were kind of socially distanced in pods. So the company was split into 4. And so, you know, our 2020-2021 season kind of was split and was kind of just a half of a season. Mm-hmm. And so even new dancers that came in, I mean, I didn't meet some of the new dancers until probably a good maybe like 3 months into that season. Wow. It pretty much ran from February, once we got into the studio, February to June.
Yeah.
And we were split in pods. My pod, including me, only had 6 dancers. So yeah, I mean, we were literally split into like pods 1A, 1B, 2A, and 2B. Mm-hmm. And so for this, though, I was very lucky that Edward still wanted to give me and some of my friends slash colleagues the opportunity to still choreograph. Yeah. And it was kind of a perfect time given the circumstances, because Ballymet is very lucky that we have the Ballymet Performance Space, which is our Black Box Theater, which is soon actually going to be actually connected to the Ballymet Artistic Studios. And so it seats about 225. I believe it's a beautiful, in my opinion, beautiful Black Box Theater that we performed, that I performed in my first season, did a Ma Kong work, Andy Shermerly and one of Edward's works in there for a triple bill my first season, which was awesome. And so this was the first time we were going to be performing in there since. And I was lucky enough to be able to get the opportunity again to start a work and hopefully, you know, have it come to fruition. God forbid anything with it would happen again.
Yeah.
And luckily it ended up going incredibly well. And that was my kind of first, that ended up being my first work for Ballymet, which was called Figurines, which had 2 men and 4 women. And, or it could be just, you know, 4 dancers on point and 2 dancers on flat. Mm-hmm. And it, yeah, that piece ended up being like my baby. And it's funny, I only have 1 post on my Instagram right now. And it's a clip of Figurine. So it's one of those things where I'm like, oh, maybe I'll make a little bit more of a personal Instagram and keep this one. It's more of like choreography and dance related. Right. But, you know, we'll see where it goes. But that being said, that ended up being, kind of my first work for a main company, which was incredible. And I actually ended up dancing in the piece myself. And so, and I'm pretty sure I know you've done a conversation with him, but Jim Nowakowski, used to be roommates as well. He's one of my closest friends. Loved him to death. He and I danced the same role. And I'm like, what was I thinking? Double casting myself with Jim Nowakowski. What was I thinking? And so, but I more so did it where I choreographed most of the steps on him. So it would feel more kind of like I wasn't just, you know, kind of just going with my own strengths. I really want to challenge myself in that sense, especially with a dance to like gym. So I choreographed pretty much, I would say 80-90% of the steps on him, and then kind of retaught it to myself. And it was difficult. But it ended up being like so incredible. We performed for, Jinx wants to be center of attention again. we performed for about from beginning of May to the end of June. And because we were in pods, it was like each pod switched off for the weekend. So like it was something like Saturday would be pod one and then Sunday would be pod two. And every weekend for I think like 10 weeks, we performed in our performance space from May 7th, I think, to like June 25th or something. And so we got a lot of performance opportunity that season because of that, which was really awesome that it was able to be able to happen. But that was such an amazing opportunity that I was able to get with choreography. And then moving forward with kind of the success, so to speak, of that piece, Edward, the artistic director, and Sue, our executive director, they both really loved the piece. And, you know, then moving forward, not last season, but now, last season, I was lucky enough to get to choreograph another work for the main company again. And this time it was going to be on the main stage since we were back to kind of a regular season. And so I got to perform. I was so lucky to perform or choreograph in a triple bill with Dana Genshaft and Amy Seiwert. And so I was on. It was great to have like a triple bill, you know, with these two amazing female choreographers, a black choreographer myself, and to have, you know, a more versatile triple bill rep show in that sense. And that piece, it was called Decisions, which was a little bit based on the butterfly effect and chaos theory and inspired by that a little bit. And that was an amazing opportunity to be able to have another work kind of under my belt and on the main stage this time. And so at this point, I am just absolutely in love with choreographing as well, as much as I love dancing. And so, you know, the goal is to really be able to hopefully do them somewhat simultaneously throughout my dance career, if I can. You know, I actually had a wonderful conversation with Amy when she was here when we had performing the Triple Bill show, and, you know, trying to pick her brain about, you know, I know, obviously you were a dancer for a very long time as well, and I know you started choreographing while you were a dancer, and, you know, especially under the direction of Michael Smuin, were you able to, you know, potentially like miss a program for 6 weeks and go choreograph somewhere and then come back and perform, you know, for the rest of the season. And she was saying that she did end up being able to have opportunities like that where she was able to do that. And so I'm hoping that, praying that that can happen as well for me in the future, you know, before I decide that I, you know, want to stop dancing. And yeah, so it's been great to find this new passion of choreography. And even though I started choreographing, you know, almost 10 years ago at this point now, I feel like it didn't really hit for me that I really loved it, probably until, you know, I got into Alberta Ballet and had that first opportunity and then realized, oh my gosh, I want this to happen again very soon.
I love that because it's very easy because of social media and the evolution of dance just over the last like 15 years, it's very easy for dancers to only ever see the final product of so many of their professionals and, you know, choreographers and dancers just like yourself and all the dancers who look up to you. And I think it's really important. One of the reasons I started these conversations the week after the pandemic actually hit, that's where I was like thinking about what I want to do with my time. One of the purposes was to bring the process, you know, so that I mainly have younger pre-professional dancers follow me. I definitely have professionals too, but I would say the majority of my population are students. Right. And to bring them professionals like yourself to explain that, you know, the success that you experience now came with such a journey and so much trial and error, like what you were speaking of earlier, I think is really something special for a lot of dancers to hear. To shift gears a little bit, and then we'll wrap it up. I don't want to waste too much of your time, or, you know. I do want to hear a little bit about how you are able to navigate food and fueling your body. You are busy. You are navigating a lot just on your day-to-day with everything that you're doing. And I love that you started off our conversation with the idea that you're meal prepping before you head into performance season. So just talk to me a little bit about how you do handle fueling your body, because this is obviously a challenge for both the students and the professionals that are going to watch this.
Yeah. And it's, which is one of the reasons why I felt like too, when you had reached out to me about this, I thought, wow, this is, I mean, just manifesting at its finest, this is the perfect time for this, because I feel like lately, so a little tiny bit, very short of a backstory, November of 2021, after we had finished that performance-based season, I unfortunately had an injury, which ended up being frayed cartilage in my knee. And so, long story short, I ended up getting surgery for that injury about 10 months later, and then was kind of, and technically I'm still in recovery, even though I'm now kind of back to performing. Mm-hmm. And so the whole process was about a year and a half that I was kind of pretty much off stage entirely. I was off stage at least from about March 2021, and I just did, and I did my first performance in April of 2022 with Edward Swan Lake at the very end of the season. That was my first show back in over a year. And so kind of coming back now to getting back to a schedule where I am dancing again. And this is the first time personally that I will perform Nutcracker in 4 years.
Wow.
And so coming back to such a huge run of shows as the first classical thing, that, because, you know, with Swan Lake, it was, you know, we did 2 weekends of shows and we were done. You know, we did maybe like 8 shows. And with this, we have, this year we have 25 shows. We're doing from December 7th through to the 23rd, we're doing 25 shows. And I know some companies do double that, but I'm like, it's still a lot to do within that amount of time. And so for me, I was thinking, lately, I'm like, oh, I feel like, you know, at the end of the day, I'm like crashing a lot and feeling potentially, or especially on the weekend too, that I'm not necessarily feeling like I'm getting enough of certain things. And I really feel like I maybe want to talk to someone who works with dancers and nutrition about how I can really properly fuel my body with what we're doing. Because at the end of the day, we have to really fuel our bodies, especially with Nutcracker season. It's just, it's no joke. I mean, you're pretty much living in the theater. And I, for the most part, am someone who likes to, personally, I like to eat, at least throughout the week, I'm one of those people who kind of likes to eat the same thing pretty much for every meal. So breakfast, I'm pretty much always making the same thing, whether that be, you know, like scrambled eggs with green onion, like an avocado, and either like toast or a bagel. And I'm pretty much always eating that for breakfast. And then for lunch, I'll have something a little bit smaller, because throughout the day, personally, depending on what I'm doing, I may not want to dance on a super full stomach, so I'll maybe have something lighter, like a peanut butter and jelly, and then I'll have an apple and some chips or something like that. And then for dinner, it's more so, I really love like having pasta, which is probably what I'll meal prep for the theater too. So, you know, pasta with meatballs or like chicken parmesan, something related to that. But lately it's been one of those things where I'm like, okay, with how varied our schedule can be, it can be so hard to, you know, feel like I'm having the right portion at the right time, or even thinking about the fact of, am I even getting all the right like vitamins and minerals that I should be getting? Like, am I having enough magnesium? I feel like I'm not having enough iron right now, or you know, my vitamin A, vitamin D, like all that stuff. And so I was thinking, oh, this is actually the perfect time for me to be talking to you, because I'm like, I really want to work with Rachel to be able to like do something that can really work for me, because it is very personal what everyone needs, you know, like the person next to me is not going to need the same thing that I'm going to need, even depending on if we're dancing the exact same things. It's just everybody's body is different and needs and has different needs for what they need when it comes to light performance schedules, medium, very hard performance schedules. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I love hearing that you, first thing is just this knowledge of knowing that like I'm dancing a lot, your upcoming performance season is extremely intense, and knowing that you need to prepare ahead of time. I often call this a proactive approach, because during this time, most dancers, we don't necessarily feel hungry and we don't necessarily have the time to think about our meals and snacks throughout the day, but that's not a reason to not get them in. So, you know, prepping ahead of time. I love the pasta idea. I think that a lot of dancers are scared of carbs, and it's very unfortunate because carbs are what are powering you on stage. So I love the idea of prepping pasta. especially when it comes to the fear of, am I getting some of these vitamins in during performance season? And I often say this for dancers, don't be afraid of some smoothies, even pre-made smoothies. Like, I often have my dancers drinking like some of those Orgain shakes. They're a favorite of mine just to help get in, make up for some vitamins and minerals. Cause during performance season, when you're so busy, it's very hard to get in a lot of veggies. They're right. just not, they're not as accessible, you know, they're to go on stage after eating like a salad is not the most comfortable situation. Mm-hmm. So those, some prepackaged options are, I'm often posting about that because it helps to kind of reduce the fear and the stigma around some of these foods, because they actually can be super helpful for busy performance seasons. So I love hearing that you are thinking about, you know, how am I going to fuel my body during this crazy busy time? And because that's what's going to help you power through, and even to prevent, you know, the potential for burnout later on after a performance season.
Right. And I even think for me too, and with any dancer that's gone through this, that all of that on top of the fact that I'm also recovering from an injury and surgery, and the fact that I have potentially, you know, imbalance in my body and my muscles too, of making sure that it's, you know, extra important that I'm really fueling properly, because I mean, it's also not just about just your health on stage, but it's you know, it's about your physicality of being able to get everything in order for you to help prevent injuries as well. Not just, you know, the fact of how hard we're working, that obviously we want to stay, you know, we don't want to pass out on stage, you know? So it's super important, especially with even like injury prevention and recovering from an injury. It's so important to keep that fuel going. And I'm very happy you mentioned the smoothies as well, because that's something that I recently have started implementing a little bit, that I'm trying to kind of like, kind of perfect for myself, which I've started to really enjoy, because I used to not really like smoothies that much, but I feel like I'm finally finding a recipe that is really good for me as well, because I have a huge sweet tooth, so I feel like they have to be sweet, whether it's even more of like a green smoothie or a fruit smoothie or a combination of the two. I'm like, it has to be sweet.
Yes, I get that. And it really will be so helpful, especially during this time, because like I said, getting in a salad or even just veggies in general can be just super hard, especially in the winter. A lot of these veggies are just not as accessible. So especially in New York, they're just not as accessible. So I would love to hear, this is the question that I ask all of the professionals who come on my series. It's a loaded question, but I'd love for you to answer it, because you've provided us with such beautiful insight so far. How would you define what it means to be the healthy dancer?
Oh my goodness.
I know.
Ooh. Oh, that's hard. But, you know, definitely a combination of, you know, body and mind, you know, it's also not just, yes, our body is our instrument itself in the physical act of dancing, but to also remember that things like your mental health affect how you dance as well. And that is incredibly important. So I really think it needs to be, just like as dancers, we want to be well-rounded in our techniques and our styles. We want to be able to be healthily well-rounded with our bodies as well, not just being, you know, trying to be physically at our best, but mentally at our best, emotionally at our best. And Lord knows everybody deals with different things, and there's always going to be some sort of obstacle that can help kind of change that balance for yourself. But it's super important to try to find something every day that can really help all aspects of your body move forward, whether that be listening to your favorite song in the morning to just pep you up emotionally, meditate for a little bit to help you more so mentally, you know, get in 50 push-ups in the morning before, you know, having a very good warm up and cool down before you actually take class or perform. I can't remember, there was a dancer who I was watching something on her, that it was, I think actually it was even from a couple of years ago. It was Nikisha Fogo, who's now at San Francisco.
She's been on this show.
Oh, she has.
I've had her on this series.
I absolutely am obsessed with her. She's incredible. Yeah, and she also has Sphinx Cats as well. So I love that. But I was watching a video of her on YouTube randomly that came up in my suggestions, that said, and she said something really smart about I'm pretty sure it was her who said, you know, the work doesn't necessarily end when, you know, when you're done dancing, or even like before you start dancing. And that is, you know, something that's great, but something that's also really hard about being, you know, a dancer and being an overall healthy dancer is that you do have to really think about your body in all aspects, not just when you're at work and not just when you're there from, personally for me, from 9:15 to 6 o'clock, you know, on a regular work rehearsal week. You know, it's the work is kind of always having to happen in some form.
Yeah.
And it's a challenge, but, you know, as dancers, we're, you know, we're very determined and hardworking. Yeah. So we will make it happen for ourselves no matter what. So.
Absolutely. I could not agree more. I think that's just such a beautiful testament in regards to the work doesn't necessarily just end right there. And we're all, especially for dancers who can very much fixate on their work in the studio, but realizing that we can take it out of the studio and there's so much more. Everything you listed before, whether it's doing some push-ups in the morning, listening to some music, doing some meditation, there's so many small little outlets that we can do that can really help to focus us and even eventually, or ultimately, I should say, enhance the work that we're doing as dancers. Right. So thank you so much. This was such an honor to connect with you. You've provided us with such beautiful insight, Leland.
Thank you, Rachel. No, I was so excited. I like seriously could not believe when I got the message from you. I said, I can't believe she wants to work with me. I feel like I'm a nobody.
No, not at all. Not at the slightest. I am honored to chat with you and bring your insight to this series. So thank you. Let's stay connected. Okay.
Yes, I would love to. Thank you so much, Rachel.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Bye.